For 5 days, two Southeast Asian neighbors were locked in what's been described as their deadliest confrontation in more than a decade. At least 38 people were killed, more than 300,000 people displaced. The situation between Thailand and Cambodia threatened to escalate further when suddenly a diplomatic breakthrough after talks held in Malaysia, which is also the current ASEAN chair. Here's Malaysian Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim on Monday.
Prime Minister Hun Manet and Acting Prime Minister Pomtam Wichaya Chai have expressed their positions and willingness to immediate ceasefire and return to normalcy.
Thailand's Acting Prime Minister Pomtam Wichaya Chai welcomed the move.
I would like to express my sincere appreciation to Prime Minister Anwar, the government of China, and President Trump for your good view and concern. Today's outcome reflects Thailand's desire for peaceful dissolution, while continuing to protect our sovereignty and the life of our people. We agree to a ceasefire with assurance myself that it will be carried out successfully in good faith by both sides.
And Cambodia's Prime Minister too, Hun Manet, lauded the progress.
We hope that the solutions that Prime Minister Anwar just announced will set a condition for moving forward for our bilateral discussion to return to normalcy of the relationship and as a foundation for future de-escalation of forces.
The current conflict traces its roots back centuries, primarily around the contested location of a religious site. Thailand and Cambodia both claim the Priya Wihir Temple as their own. Claims over it have led to a lifetime of rivalry. I'm Teresa Tang. In this special episode of the CNA Correspondent Podcast, we get a rare look at what it's like on the ground along the border of the conflict zone. CNA correspondents Jack Board and Leong Wai Kit have personally spoken to the men, women, and soldiers caught in the crossfire. Jack is speaking to me from Thailand's Surin province, and Wai Kit is on the other side of the border in Priya Wihir, Cambodia. Jack, Wai Kit, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me. I know you're out in the field as we speak.
Yeah, it's great to see you. And Jack, hope you're keeping well.
Hey, Wai Kit. Hey, Teresa. Good to see you both. Yep, happy to be here.
I want to start where you guys are. Jack, can you give me a sense of where you are? What have you been seeing?
Right. So as you mentioned, I'm in Surin province. So this is one of six of the border provinces along the Thai-Cambodian border, which has been impacted by these clashes over the past week or so. Right now, I'm about an hour's drive north of the border. We have been down there in the past few days, getting really up close and personal with the border itself. We've spent a lot of time in evacuation centers here in Surin and in the neighboring province of Buriram, which is to the west of here. So yeah, lots of time talking to people displaced by this conflict, and lots of time around the central areas of clashes. We know that these ancient Khmer temples are really central to the disputes that we've been seeing. Priya Wihir is just one of them. Cambodia is asserting its sovereignty through the International Court of Justice over three of those temples. I visited them last month. We haven't been able to get there this time because it's become an area of fighting.
And Wai Kit, I spoke to you early this morning, and you were on a three-hour journey en route to Priya Wihir. That's where you are in Cambodia. You told me you were set to join the diplomatic corps on a tour and briefing by Cambodian authorities. What have locals said about their experience during those 5 days of combat?
Where I am, this is the meeting point of the diplomatic convoy. We're expecting them in an hour or so. But let me just very quickly swivel my camera so they can see the background. I'm not sure if you can see. There's a group of soldiers sitting right there. These are village rangers. And for the first time in 5 days, they're not so on edge, as you mentioned, because fighting has has stopped since Tuesday. This time of the day, there will be lots of bombings and lots of sounds of bombings in the last 5 days. But since the truce, it has been quiet. The rangers have also told me that 1 kilometer from where I am, just behind me, there is an unexploded bomb. And I asked them, what are you going to do with it? They said, when the situation gets even better, then they'll approach, you know, they will get the minesweeping team to handle that situation. So as you can see, it's still very dangerous. On my way here, Teresa, we chanced upon a petrol station and also a provision shop that was destroyed by a blast. That happened on July 28th. I spoke to the daughter of the family who owned this place, and just one simple question of, tell us what happened. And she started crying because she said this is her family's lifetime of savings, establishing that shop. And in a matter of seconds, because of the blast, everything is gone. They don't know what they're going to do. And when I was there, I could see really the interior and exterior of that shop charred. I can still smell some afterburn and the roof, the zinc roof, kind of sort of crumbled. So that's something that I saw along the way.
It's so easy to forget beyond the headlines, ordinary people are being affected by this conflict. Jack, you have spoken to some residents along the Thai side of the border. What have they been telling you?
Yeah, I think disruption to people's everyday lives is such a big and important part of this story. We're talking 300,000 people who are no longer living in their homes. They're no longer working their fields or working at their market stalls. These are typically poorer parts of both Cambodia and Thailand. So, and now we go to evacuation shelters where people are sleeping on the floor. There are children running around who can't go to school. There are people walking their dogs because they've brought their pets with them because they're afraid of what might happen. And then they talk about, oh, I don't know what's happened to my animals that I've left behind, my buffaloes or cows or whatever it may be. I don't know what's happened to my market stall. We didn't even lock the doors because we were so afraid when, you know, the fighting started to take place. So this human element, I think, is really important. And it's a reason why we hope that this ceasefire will last so that people can kind of return to their normal lives. Right now, that's not happening. People are not going back to their homes, at least on my side of the border. I went down to Chong Chom, which is, you know, one of the major checkpoints typically between Thailand and Cambodia. I was there also about a month ago and saw a lot of cross-border trade, big trucks, people passing on motorcycles. Cross-border trade is really normal in this part. People travel from Thailand to Cambodia all the time. It was like a ghost town. It was like time had stood still there. There was nobody around. The shops are closed. The roads are empty. There were a few dogs kind of strolling about. I found one man who was there, who was had his shop open, and we asked him, why are you here? And he had been away for the past 5 days. He went back because he was worried about his business. He was going to open for a few hours just to see if anybody was around, just check on, you know, the general provisions. But he was too scared to stay, and he was going to go back to a safe place in the afternoon. Also spoken to a lot of the people stuck in the evacuation shelters. They don't feel safe yet. They don't feel like they can go home. They don't trust the news, and they don't trust politicians from what they told me. So I think it's worth having a listen to, especially some of the older people who have lived through this before and the cyclical nature of this conflict. They've seen it 14 years ago when fierce fighting happened, and they're still afraid of what might unfold in the days and weeks to come. Take a listen to this one man, Wan Chai Klomwa. He was staying at the evacuation shelter in Buriram when we spoke to him.
YKit, you managed to gain access to soldiers recovering in hospital after they were injured in the line of duty. When you spoke to them, what was morale like? What did they tell you? What happened to them?
Well, I think they were coping as well as can be. There was a certain, you know, upbeatness about the soldiers. I mean, yes, they're all recuperating, they're all injured, but they managed to smile. they managed to wave at us. I mean, of course, there's communication difficulty. I can't speak Khmer. They don't speak English. But that body language of them looking at us and welcoming us is very genuine. Of course, we made sure that the soldiers we spoke to were fit enough to talk to us. We don't want to, you know, hinder their recovery. What struck me was there was this old gentleman and when I asked him how old he was, he said he was 65. He's due to retire next year. So he still said yes to his call of duty to go to the front line. No qualms about it. I asked him, how did your family react? They said, do what you need to do for the country. We trust that you will protect yourself. We don't worry about you. Do what you need to do. But it's still difficult, right? Because he's been in the military for 40 years. Never before has he been injured until this time round. And then I spoke to another soldier. He's 45 years old. And I asked him to describe for me how he sustained injuries. Let's take a listen.
Then, a breakthrough after 5 days, a ceasefire mediated by Malaysia with the assistance of China and the United States. Jack, tell me, what has Thai reaction been to this truce?
Well, I think firstly, just from the everyday person's perspective, most of them didn't seem to really be fully across these political machinations that were taking place over in Malaysia, a world away really from their reality. Probably that news has swept through people. But as I said, there's not a whole lot of trust in that process right now. I was sat in a tiny little Thai restaurant. We were taking a break from the evacuation shelter, eating some somtam and sticky rice when that news conference was happening. I had my laptop like propped up on the restaurant table with my headphones in. It was quite an extraordinary press conference. I don't know if you felt the same, but just to see these three leaders really somewhat unified, it felt like this wave of peace had swept over this room, totally at odds from what we were seeing at the front lines and the clashes that had still sort of continued, this disconnect between politics and the reality of military, but certainly did seem like a powerful moment for Prime Minister Anwar as the chairman of ASEAN, showed that ASEAN still has some sway in resolving disputes within its member states, despite some of the criticism that's come over the years that there hasn't been proper resolutions in Myanmar, for example. YKIT's, you know, been following these issues very closely. I think the influence of the United States and China was really prescient here. To have Donald Trump weigh into this dispute was quite surprising. It's clear that he is presenting this peacemaking presidential vibes right now. We even saw him with Keir Starmer in the past couple of days saying that there would be six major wars if he wasn't involved. So for him to use this economic leverage at this time with Thailand and Cambodia suspending the trade discussions if they didn't put their weapons down was really interesting. And I would love to have known what was actually going on in those meetings and what each side wanted.
Yeah, remarkable, like you say, to see that show of unity when the world seems so fractured right now. YKIT, this conflict, though, it comes at a very sensitive time, right? Thai-Cambodia relations, they've been rocky over several other issues. We've got the scam centers, that leaked phone call involving former leader Hun Sen as well. The Cambodian prime minister, though, Hun Manet, he welcomed this ceasefire. He lamented too many lives have already been lost.
Teresa, I want to quickly jump on Jack's point. He said, you know, when there was this ceasefire made, it felt like there was a sense of peace. In fact, the next day after the truce came into effect, I spoke to several villagers. They had no idea that there was a truce between Cambodia and Thailand. All they noticed was at about 11:40 p.m., there was still heavy fighting, and then from 12 a.m. it stopped, and then it has not been noisy since. It has been silent since. So they didn't know there was a truce, but they did notice that it was quiet. And for many of these villagers, what's important to them, these are everyday folks. These are, as Jack mentioned earlier, people who live in the borders are a bit poorer. For them, it's important to have peace. And I was just about to leave after speaking to a woman. She helped me back, and she told through my translator, she wanted to convey that she, as a Cambodian, she wants peace. She wants all the fighting to stop. Slowly, you get a sense that people are coming back to their hometowns because just yesterday, I was at a major road intersection. And that road, four roads, they all lead to the border areas with violence. I was told in the last 5 days, those roads were silent. Apart from military vehicles and vehicles ferrying journalists, it's always quiet. But yesterday, while I was doing my live cross at the road junction, I saw tuk-tuks, I saw motorcycles, I saw tractors, and some semblance of life coming back. People are coming back from afar, back to their hometown, because they feel it's now safe to do so. I was also talking to two brothers, 16-year-old, 8-year-old, who had come back from Siem Reap, family of eight, including grandparents. They learned about the ceasefire, and they thought, okay, it's time to come back. And these two brothers, they were cycling, carefree. And you can see how valuable this means to everyday folk. As you said, Teresa, we sometimes forget beyond the headlines, but to these people, this is their day-in, day-out life. So peace to them is extremely, extremely valuable.
Jack, this peace, though, this ceasefire has already nearly derailed accusations of conditions being broken. The Thai army just on Tuesday saying Cambodian troops had attacked in five locations. Cambodia's defense minister, though, said no armed clashes had taken place. What would you say comes next? I mean, how long will this peace last?
I think it's an impossible question to answer, to know how long this can last. I mean, just right now, as Wykett was speaking, there were three Thai army helicopters that just swept past this area. And it shows that, you know, this is still somewhat a front line. Mm-hmm. The ceasefire may be written down on paper, but, you know, it doesn't mean that it will prevail for the long term. A meeting for a couple of hours in Putrajaya will not solve decades and decades of disputes along a, you know, a highly contested border. These are entrenched in history, the problems that exist here. It's not going to be solved simply with one meeting. So we'll certainly be watching what happens, I guess, in the months and years to come. We know that there is that ICJ process that will be going on. Cambodia has taken its claim to the ICJ like they did with the Prayvihear Temple a few years back. That process will take quite a bit of time. Thailand has already said it won't be involved and it won't recognize the results. So there's tension points there around what are the underlying issues here. And then I guess to come back to the people, as Wykett was saying as well, there are close ties between the people here. They can recognize the difference between what is happening at a high level in terms of politics and what is happening on the ground. I spoke with people who work at a market in the town of Prasat yesterday. We're still open. They were still functioning, a lot of them just to provide food to troops on the front line. And they said normally they have Cambodians working in their stores. They have Cambodian employees who live in the town, function as, you know, in society. They had to go home. They had to go to Oda Mianche, where Wykett has been reporting in the past few days. And, you know, they've been trying to check on their safety to make sure they're all right. And, you know, the situation has been difficult. But they feel for their compatriots. They understand that this situation is not a human-to-human issue. It's about something bigger. And finding the solution to that bigger problem, I think, will take some time.
And before we go, Wykett, I want your perspective as an ASEAN correspondent. This truce, it's made some take a second look at the importance of ASEAN centrality. What would you say the ceasefire success we've seen tells us about ASEAN's diplomatic and leadership capabilities?
Well, the quick answer is at least ASEAN is still relevant. There will be critics of ASEAN saying that this bloc is toothless, useless, irrelevant, because there's not much the bloc can do. But the very fact that ASEAN chair, Malaysia, is able to mediate this ceasefire says a lot. Look, ASEAN in itself has formal dispute mechanisms, dispute resolution mechanisms, but there's quite a number of red tape surrounding that. That's why it's very rarely used. So the formal channel not used, there's a lot of backdoor channel now being used, which is what Mr. Anwar Ibrahim is doing. We have seen the moment the border dispute surfaced, he had got in touch with both the leaders of Cambodia and Thailand, saying that Malaysia stands ready to help. And indeed, he had followed through that promise and been able to, you know, put these two leaders together in Putrajaya to negotiate for this ceasefire. That said, whether or not this ceasefire really holds, of course, fingers are crossed. Everybody crosses fingers to hope that this does hold. But to answer your question, Teresa, there's at least relevance of ASEAN. And it's very likely that Cambodia and Thailand will take well to an ASEAN member state being involved in this border dispute as opposed to any other country outside of the region.
Wykit, Jack, thank you so much for this. Please take care out there. You and your crew, stay safe.
Thank you.
Thanks, Teresa.
It is still a fluid situation and one that our network of correspondents on the ground continue to cover. Just head to cna.asia or YouTube to find their latest reports. And a reminder, the TV episode of CNA Correspondent airs every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Singapore, Hong Kong time. I'm Teresa Tang. The team behind this episode is Saya Win, Clara Ong, Tiffany Ung, Junaini Johari, Pei Ning Ho, Nat Fetelvero, and Craig Dale. Thanks for listening.